human sacrifice. The Crane Library is looking for student volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a 2-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
You're biking. Oh no! Something broke and you need it fixed or you need to learn how to fix it, and the AMS Bike Co-op and Bike Kitchen have been there for you. And now is your chance to be there for them. Come out November 10th to GAM Gallery at 110 East Hastings from 7 p.m. to midnight for Peddling Art, their second annual fundraiser and bike art auction in collaboration with Our Community Bikes. So share the love. Make it out.
Have you heard of The Scorder?
Yes.
That salty magazine from CITR 101.9 FM?
Yes.
Pick up your copy of this month's issue at Red Cat Records, Budgie's Burritos, the VPL, or at any of our other 132 distribution locations. This issue features Aura Kogan, Holy Hum, Van City Queens, Good Night Out, and Sawdust Collector, plus reviews of local artists, shows, and other creative endeavors. All in one Salty F publication.
Yes! Yas, yas, yas.
Did you know that Thrive Week is next week? Thrive is a campus organization dedicated to building positive mental health for everyone at UBC. UBC Campus Experience is celebrating by putting out a podcast around reducing the stigma of mental health by sharing the lived experiences of students. Wow. The pilot podcast, produced by Archie Stapleton, will follow Alexandra Mann, a student leader on campus, and her struggle with mental health, learning disabilities, and the intersections of the two. Tune in to hear the pilot episode and learn more about how you can get involved in creating a safer space on the UBC Vancouver campus.
Nikkei National Museum's Hastings Park 1942 exhibit marks the 75th anniversary of Japanese-Canadian internment. Visit the exhibit until January 13th to see Japanese Problem, a contemporary performance piece which offers a glimpse into a dark episode of history at the Pyrenees Livestock Barn. Nikkei National Museum is located in Burnaby and entry is by donation.
Vancouver, you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. This is the UBC Spooky Hour, which airs every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. The show is all about what's happening on UBC's campus. The UBC Spooky Hour is collaboratively produced by the UBC Affairs Collective. If you'd like to hear If you like what you hear and you want to help create content, send an email to theubcaffairs@citr.ca. You can find all episodes of the UBCA Spooky Hour, usually called the Happy Hour, podcasted online at citr.ca. I'm one of your hosts, Jen Brulé, and I'm joined in the studio by Alex Lentz.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. We're super excited about this week's episode because we're talking about Halloween and spooky things. And honestly, sometimes campus is really spooky and it's midterm season. I've been spooked out by my midterms recently, to be honest. So yeah, we're super excited about this episode. So I think first up, we're going to talk about some kind of ghost stories and like some spooky stories that have made a kind of legend on campus. So Jen, did you have a spooky story you wanted to share with us?
I do have a spooky story. So are you aware of the ghost hitchhiker?
I am not. No.
Okay. All right. I'll tell you all about it.
Please do.
This urban legend takes place back in the 60s, in which a couple got into an argument while driving along University Boulevard. They were on their way to the UBC library. The argument got heated, and the young girl eventually got out of the car and began walking in the rain. While walking, she was struck by another car and killed instantly. Following the incident, numerous reports by male students driving on the University Boulevard claim that they were picked up by a woman, hitchhiker, that handed them a piece of paper with the library's address on it. According to these males, the spirit jumped in the rear seat and then quickly disappeared. Ooh.
I love that story is like, these boys picked up this girl and then she disappeared. I'm like, is that just the male ego? Like some guys are like, no, she didn't want to go on the next date, so she ran away. Therefore, there is a ghost on UBC campus. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I buy it.
I don't know. I have never seen this hitchhiker.
Me neither. And also, I'm kind of like, why would you hitchhike if you were already at University Boulevard and you were just trying to get to UBC? Like, you're pretty close.
I'm like, to be fair, it is kind of far. Like, it's probably at least 2 kilometers.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, I'm always on my bike, so I'd kind of underestimate it. But yeah, maybe I wouldn't want to walk that. I don't know.
And it rains. Raining.
Yeah, that's true. Have you heard of the room 203 in IKB?
No, because I never go to the library.
Me kidding. Neither. But yeah, maybe if there was a ghost at the library, I would go more often. Like, that could kind of make studying more fun if I knew that I was in the presence of, you know, spirits. But yeah, so according to the UBC Library website, so in 2013, they posted this little blog post about reports from some librarians who were seeing spirits or hearing spirits in room 203. So I'm just going to read some of this out. So, quote, at night in room 203, you can hear the distinct sound of someone typing near the front of the room when no one else is in the office, says Julie Mitchell, managing librarian of the Chapman Learning Commons. When I still worked down there, I often found myself double-checking to see if someone was there. The office space has been occupied by many different staff over the years and even has a hidden fireplace behind the office walls. Several other myths with UBC library connections have been well publicized in Vancouver. In one, the spirit of a hitchhiker, dun dun dun, headed to the library haunts University Boulevard. In another, an old woman in a white dress appears and then vanishes when approached. Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard typing in room 203. I don't even know where room 203 is.
I mean, if you spend that much time in the library, you're bound to hear things, probably.
I know. I'm like, if I'm in there for like more than 3 hours, I start hearing things just kind of out of craziness. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever spotted ghosts on campus, but that could be really fun. Like, if there were ghost hunters on campus, that could be really cool. I don't know. What do you think is, like, the spookiest building on campus?
Probably the old sub.
Oh, that's a good one. The basement of the old sub, like, that hallway that kind of, you know, at the bottom that connected. Like, that was pretty spooky.
Yeah. It was great. I miss it.
Or like, I don't know, even like the chem building, you know, it's pretty old and like kind of weird and I don't know. There's lots of like kind of weird parts of campus. I mean, also like Pacific Spirit Park can be pretty creepy.
Really? I feel like it's magical.
Okay.
I really like it. I like running in there and it's definitely, I wouldn't say it's spooky. I mean, I don't do it at night, but.
Yeah. Maybe at night it could be spooky, but like it's pretty calming. That's true. I'm looking for spooky things on campus.
I don't know. I'm not really scared being at this camp. There's nothing, there's no like, ooh, everything's going on. But other than the old sub, maybe Buchanan is pretty old.
Yeah. The courtyard in Buchanan could be kind of spooky at night, I think. Buchanan Tower. I don't know if you guys have ever had a class in Buchanan Tower, but like it's pretty weird. The elevator is really old and like it often doesn't work. I'm always scared it's going to drop down. Mm. Kind of scary. Anyway, speaking of spooky things. So there was a thriller that played at UBC recently, just yesterday, Thursday, October 26th. So the thriller was called Bleeding Edge and it came out in 2016. It is directed by Leon Lee, who is a UBC alumni. And it was presented, the screening was presented by the UBC Falun Dafa Fellowship. So I interviewed Leon Lee to kind of get his take on this film and making this movie, because it is quite political and it's kind of a crazy story. But I think before that, I kind of wanted to give you guys a little bit of a history about Falun Dafa. They're frequently kind of have posters around campus, you know, and they throw events. And I think a lot of people don't really know what they do. And they are a little bit perhaps not mysterious, but I don't know, misunderstood, or like it's kind of to be interpreted exactly what they represent. And so I think some students I've seen on Reddit, there was kind of confusion about who they are. So just first off, Falun Dafa, otherwise known as Falun Gong, it's a Chinese spiritual practice that's rooted in the ancient Chinese tradition of Qigong. So it's essentially a series of movements that you can practice, and its main tenets are truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. So Falun Gong took its form in the 1990s. And the Chinese Communist Party was initially in support of the practice. However, as more Chinese people began practicing Falun Gong, the government became suspicious of its motives and began crackdowns on practitioners. So in 1999, Falun Gong practitioners staged a mass peaceful protest in Beijing to protest the government's growing repression of the group. And this, of course, aggravated the Chinese government and led to a large-scale crackdown of Falun Gong. Ultimately, the Chinese government has officially banned the practice, and they've been labeled a cult by the Chinese government. So there is debate as to whether the group is a cult or not. As far as evidence shows, Falun Gong does not meet the definition of a cult. And, of course, Chinese media is infamous for their censorship and corruption, so it can be hard to trust sources, but like I said, there's no evidence to kind of suggest that this is really a cult by definition. So undeniably, Falun Gong practitioners have been persecuted by the Chinese government, and there have been many arrests, and people have been put into labor camps. But where the story gets really weird is that, so China is the largest market for organ donations in the world, or organ transplants in the world. So many people around the world will travel to China to receive an organ transplant rather than wait on their home country's wait list for a transplant. And China has admitted in the past that they have used organs of prisoners who are going to be executed for these transplants. And there are numerous allegations that imprisoned Falun Gong practitioners and other political prisoners like Tibetans have had their organs forcibly removed and sold on the Chinese market. So this issue is becoming more known on the international stage, and it has received a lot more media attention as of late. So when you see Falun Dafa posters around campus, just know that that's kind of what they stand for and why they kind of are you know, trying to reveal some of the political repression that they face, whether or not the organ harvesting is true or not. Like, there's has been evidence mounting that this is true, and lots of international governments are trying to actually kind of investigate this with the permission of the Chinese government. So it's a really complicated and controversial topic. So Leon Lee is a filmmaker and a UBC alumni, and he read about these stories and went on to make a Peabody Award-winning documentary about two Nobel Prize winners who documented this alleged organ harvesting. The film received a lot of international attention. It won many awards. It's called Human Harvest. So he has subsequently made a thriller called Bleeding Edge, which is also about the topic of organ harvesting in China. And the film stars Anastasia Lin, who is a former Miss World Canada title holder. And she was denied entry into China to compete in the Miss World competition because of her outspoken opposition to abuses at the hands of the Chinese government. So, like I said, Leon Lee was at UBC to show his new film, Bleeding Edge. I sat down to talk to him about his new film, his experience as a student at UBC, and how this film, how you can use film as a powerful tool of activism. So let's hear from Leon. So, Mr. Lee, we just watched a screening of your 2016 film, Bleeding Edge, which was shown in The Nest. And the event was presented by the Falun Dafa Fellowship at UBC. And this film is a thriller about organ harvesting in China. So why was this presented with the Falun Dafa group at UBC? And what is the relationship between organ harvesting, which is the topic of your film, and the Falun Dafa, or Falun Gong, as it is otherwise known?
The main victims of organ harvesting in China are Falun Gong practitioners. Of course, Uyghurs, Tibetans, house church members, and political dissidents are also subject to organ harvesting, but the vast majority of victims are Falun Gong practitioners. They invited us to screen the film and to do a Q&A, and that's why we're here.
Great. So your previous award-winning documentary, Human Harvest, so this film won a Peabody Award, was also about organ harvesting. So I'm curious how you became interested in this topic and how you found out about it in the first place, because it's not necessarily a topic that many people know about, and it's not covered kind of in mainstream media a lot. So yeah, how did you become interested in this?
I first learned about organ harvesting in 2006 when I read an article on a Chinese newspaper saying that there were allegations of organ harvesting in a particular hospital in China. That hospital happened to be in the same province of my hometown. Mm-hmm. And I thought this is not true. It's just impossible. But then I thought, what if it's true? So I started looking into it. The more I learned about it, the more interested I became. Then I teamed up with a Canadian researcher, David Maters and David Kilgore. They are the pioneers in the investigation into this allegation. And 8 years later, we had a human harvest. It turns out China has been harvesting organs from Falun Gong practitioners, Uyghurs, Tibetans, house church members in the hundreds of thousands, starting from 2001. And the crime is still going on today.
Is Canadian media or like international media reporting about this more and more? Is it gaining more attention, do you think? And I'm sure, you know, your film and Human Harvest and Bleeding Edge are contributing to this attention. But are you noticing it kind of being talked about more now?
Yes, it's gaining a lot more traction than before. Mm-hmm. From time to time, now we see articles talking about this issue, although certainly it is not enough because the crime is still going on. And there is just not enough awareness and pressure to effect real change in China at the moment. But after the release of the film, and of course with efforts from many other organizations, there are several countries that have passed legislations banning their citizens from going to China for organ transplants. And we also have the International Society of Transplantation Surgeons taking a stand. So the progress is not big enough, but there is progress. That's why I think we just need to do more.
I'm just curious, which countries have banned travel to China for organ transplants?
We have Spain, we have Israel, we have Taiwan, and there are a few other countries who've passed similar legislations.
Okay, interesting. So you clearly use film as a means of activism and, you know, getting the word out about this issue. So why do you think that film is an effective means of activism? And how do you think that kind of the arts and film kind of overall can contribute to activism?
Few things in the world are as powerful as films in terms of shaping how people see this world. And there are many successful examples on how one film could make a huge difference on a particular issue. Because the subject matter of organ harvesting transcends political difference, religious difference, nationality. This is something that experts call a crime against humanity. So all human beings, I believe, if they know really what's going on, they will take a stand and do something. And the question is, how do we let them know? If the mainstream media are not going to report it, then really films perhaps are the only way. Of course, you can read a report. You can do your own research. But it's dry, and most people don't want to spend hours looking into something. But an hour to watch a documentary, an hour and a half to watch a thriller, most people can do. And the emotional impact is a lot stronger than reading some numbers. And that's why I think making films like this can be a powerful way to cause social change.
I think that's a really good point that you make about films kind of being an accessible way for people to learn about things that they might not otherwise know about. And it's, yeah, we're definitely not all going to do a ton of research on, you know, tons of different subjects, but to watch a film that kind of synthesizes it for us in a creative way, I think can be very effective. So yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. So Bleeding Edge stars Anastasia Lin, who is a former Miss World Canada holder. And she made headlines about a year ago when she was denied entry to China to compete in the Miss World competition, which was being held in China. So clearly her role in this film is a powerful symbol because she has spoken out against the Chinese government in the past, which was why she was denied entry. So I'm curious what it was like working with Anastasia, and how did you guys kind of collaborate in an activist sense in this film?
Anastasia is a very talented actor, and she's also very dedicated. It's a very difficult role. Of course, she hasn't been subject to tortures like that. Most people haven't. So how do you really understand the thought process? How do you make it part of your performance? I think Anastasia spent lots of time interviewing survivors, who have managed to come to Canada or the United States, and ask about them specifically how they felt going through particular torture, how they felt being separated from their family. And I think that's one of the main reasons why she was able to give such a vulnerable but also impactful performance.
So that being said, this film clearly deals with a very heavy topic, and it's graphic at many points in the film with its use of torture. So how do working on these projects that deal with such heavy topics, how, like, do they kind of take an emotional toll on you as a filmmaker, or, you know, in Anastasia's case, interviewing and kind of going into that role? Like, how do you kind of deal with the emotional, perhaps, burden that kind of comes along with telling the story?
That's a great question. I remember writing the scenes of the torture, the sexual assault, and the force feeding. Quite often, before I could finish the scene, I was all in tears. And I knew very clearly that this is something the protagonist, Jing, has to experience in the film. But for a long time, I refused to write it. I assigned this to someone Jing knows, to just a cellmate of Jing. And one day, my partner, who wrote this with me, Drew Parker, and he said, Leon, you know it has to be Jing, right? I said, yes. So in the end, it was Jing who was subject to all this torture. It was very painful to write it. It was very painful to film it. It was even more painful to think this actually happened to real people in real life. I think that's why I really am very thankful to Anastasia and all the cast and crew who were involved, because they were very courageous. 2 days before the filming was supposed to begin, I have actors who were supposed to co-star with Anastasia backed off. Mm-hmm. They were afraid that somehow this is going to jeopardize their career in China in the future. Mm. I have location canceled. I have props and costumes seized by customs. So it was incredibly difficult films to make. We could only do it with a tiny amount of money for such a feature film. So I guess it was the realization that how painful this must have been for those who were involved, that made us through, because it became a responsibility. We just have to tell their story.
Very well put. I'm also wondering if this film has, since its release, has it actually impacted policy or perhaps an international reaction to this cause? Like, do you know of any kind of maybe movements that have kind of sprung up following the film or anything like that?
There are a few people and a few organizations working on the same thing. It's really hard to separate, these progress is as a result of whose efforts. And it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. What matters is the collective efforts. So far, we've seen some big progress. Unfortunately, we believe the crime is not stopped yet. For the film specifically, we had a UK premiere by the invitation of the Speaker of the House of UK Parliament, attended by dozens of people from both upper and lower house, and from all the major political parties. And days after that, we had an early day motion introduced. When we had the premiere in Washington, D.C., we also had people from the administration coming to see the film. So I think one lord in UK Parliament told me, I knew about organ harvesting, I read the report, but It's the first time I felt so emotionally connected to the subject matter as a result of the film. Because of Anna's performance and because of film as a medium, I think it has a unique advantage to communicate emotion.
Thank you for that. So I guess moving on to maybe a more light subject. So you are a UBC alumni. So I'm wondering what you studied at UBC, how you kind of got into filmmaking, and how kind of your maybe UBC experience influenced or didn't influence your career as a filmmaker.
Well, speaking of returning to UBC, I was thrilled to come back. But as soon as I came back, I realized I was a little terrified because I don't recognize the place at all. There's just so much change. Everything has changed. I studied business and psychology at UBC. I did not know I was going to become a filmmaker when I was studying here. But it turned out these two subjects have really helped me. Because to tell a story well, it's really about the psychology. Psychology of your characters and psychology of your viewers. So that's helpful. And very soon after I started making films, I realized perhaps the business aspect is even more important than filmmaking. It's incredibly difficult to find money to make a film, especially a film that, that nobody wants to take a risk because China is one of the biggest film markets in the world. Everybody wants to go to China to sell their films. So that's difficult. It's difficult to to find people to find ways to distribute your films. So that I want to say what I learned here really helped me, but since the films is not really that widely distributed, I don't want the Sauter profs to be disappointed.
I'm sure they're not disappointed. They probably like announced that they were once your professor, you know, like award-winning filmmaker. I'm sure they loved having you as a student. What advice would you give to students who are interested in filmmaking and maybe even more so like students who are interested in using film as a way of getting a message out or like activism? How did you kind of start in filmmaking? And what kind of lies ahead for a student who maybe wants to get into it?
It's just a lot easier to make films now as technologies advances. In particular, the amount of information available to filmmakers. You can choose to go to film school, of course, but even without film school, everything you need to learn can be easily obtained if you want to. Many people would say, just go and make a film. You learn by doing it. That's absolutely correct. In the meantime, do spend some time to study. Study films, study the ins and out, because it'll shorten your learning curve, and then you enjoy the process of making films more. If someone knows nothing about making a film and just goes on trying to make one, that first experience might not be as enjoyable as possible. And maybe he or she would just stop right there, right? So I would say spend some time, learn the basics, either in a film program or online, or just read a book, and then start doing films. Start making them. Find something you really care. Find something you really want to say. And that's the only thing that's going to keep you from the day you have the concept all the way until you finish your film.
Thank you for that. Last off, you probably hate this question, but do you have a favorite film? And if you do, what is it?
Oh, this changes over time. Now it's becoming more difficult because I like some of the classic films, but nowadays, really, I like films that have a cause. I like films that have a make people think. The entertaining value for me sometimes is secondary. So I would say for any films that really inspires people, then that's a great film.
Very well said. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Lee, and all the best with the rest of your work. Hopefully we see some more progress made on this issue.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for having me. One last thing. Thanks to the UBC Library, all UBC students and faculty can have free access to my documentary Human Harvest on Canopy. So if you go to Canopy Streaming and search Human Harvest and then tell them you are a UBC student or a faculty member, you can see the film for free.
Great to hear. So yeah, you guys can find it there. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
My mama told me when I was young, we're all on superstars.
Hey folks, the Pride Collective at UBC is an AMS resource group for LGBTQ+ folks. All our events and resources are free, so you should check us out on Facebook or come to Nest 2103 and say hi. We have so many fun events every week.
A wise man once said, UBC Ski and Board is the black sheep of the AMS.
9 out of 10 dentists agree that joining UBC Ski and Board will make you more friends than your mom ever had.
As the largest club at UBC, our membership offers you legendary parties, outrageously cheap ski trips, and sweet deals on local bars, restaurants, and gear shops.
Don't worry if you're new to skiing. There's a place for you in the UBC Ski and Board Club.
Swing by our office on the third floor of the Nest and check us out on Facebook.
Hey guys, we're back. You're listening to the UBC Happy Hour. We are a show all about UBC happenings. This show airs every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we're broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. The show is made by the UBC Affairs Collective, so it's collaboratively produced. And if you like what you hear and you want to help create content, you can just send an email to ubcaffairs@citr.ca. So we just heard an interview from Leon Lee, who is a UBC alumni, and he just directed a thriller, Bleeding Edge, highly political. So that was his take on the film and his filmmaking process. So next up, so for Halloween, we've got you covered. If you are looking to go to some fun events this weekend and next week, Amy is here with the Arts Update, and then she's just in an interview with the UBC Improv Club. So let's hear what she has to say.
Hi there, this is Amy Shandro doing your weekly arts events update. So starting off today, Friday, October 27th, I mentioned this last week, but again, we do have the UBC Improv Halloween Improv Show. So there will be lots of different scenes and sets based on Halloween themes. Going to be some spooky, scary improv theater there. Again, doors open at 6:30, show at 7 o'clock in Neville Scarf, room 100. $3 for tickets at the door and $4.50 online. As well, if you really like these improv shows and you want to go to them regularly, you can buy memberships at the door for $15, and then you get into all of the shows for free. Very good deal. As well, happening on Friday, we have Awkward October. So this is a collaboration between the UBC Music Initiative, UBC Jazz Club, and they're partnering with the UBC Multiple Sclerosis Club for a night of good food and good music. There will be an open mic and jam session there. So check that out. Sounds really, really nice, and it's for a very good cause. So the doors are at 6, starts at 6:30 in the Abdul Lada Science Student Center. And it's $8 at the door, and $1 of each ticket will go to the MS Society of Canada. Saturday, October 28th, the UBC Anime Club is having their Halloween social. So you can come and meet your fellow anime fans, and there will be food, music, dancing. And if you have a cosplay, definitely come in that. It's encouraged. You don't have to. But if you do, there will be a contest. So if you have a very intricately designed one, you can win prizes for that. It's at 6 o'clock in the Nest, and tickets will be $10. Monday, October 30th, UBC Arts for Awareness. They are an arts club that tries to bring awareness to different issues around campus, around the city, around the world. They're having an event called Camp Fear. So if you come to Irving K. Barber Room 156 at 6:30, there will be a bunch of people who are just eating candy, sharing scary campfire stories, making crafts, and also having discussions on different cultural perspectives on the concept of fear. So a night of fun Halloween activities and deep discussions. So again, 6:30 in Irving K. Barber 156, and tickets are $5 for that. On Halloween itself, if you're not looking for something too scary, you want to do something more peaceful, there is a divisional concert for the winds, brass, and percussion sections of the UBC School of Music. So you can come check that out. It's at noon in the Roy Barnett Recital Hall. It's free. So a free, calming, nice concert before the spookiness of Halloween night. After Halloween on November 1st, UBC Dance Horizons is having Workshop Wednesdays. So this is a thing they do every month, and it's starting up again. And you can take a workshop on different styles of dance. So this week, November 1st, you can take a contemporary jazz class from 6 to 7 in the Nest Performance Theater, and only $4 to take that. November 2nd, that is opening night of UBC Opera Ensemble's new show, Orfeo ed Euridice. So it is based on the Greek myth of Orpheus and Eurydice. Not quite sure how to say that. Sorry about that. So you can come check out our very, very talented opera students for a very classy night at 7:30 in the old auditorium. So starting November 2nd, but it is playing till November 5th. So you have a couple nights to come and see that. Tickets are $45 for adults, $35 for seniors, $20 for students, but $15 for UBC students. So only $15 to go to the opera. Great deal. Finally, on Friday, November 3rd, the Knitting and Sewing Club is having a fashion show. So they're going to showcase their talent, what they've knitted and what they've sewn. And the proceeds of this fashion show will go to Dress for Success Vancouver. That's a charity that helps provide resources and a network to help women achieve economic independence. It's at 5 o'clock at UBC Mikkelsen Student Art Space. So another good event for a good cause. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of my program that the improv show is happening tonight. If you want to learn more about it, I actually did an interview with the co-president and vice president of the UBC Improv Club, Dita Sue Bilgin and Aiden Parker. Enjoy.
This is Amy here with co-president Dita Sue and president of Vice, Aiden.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. So you guys run UBC Improv. For those who don't know, tell us about it, please.
So improv in general, it is a form of comedy. It's made up all on the spot, and it is...
It's essentially a form of improvised theater. So in the same way you might go and watch like a theater production, and you have like a group of people and they're doing a story, we do exactly that, but we don't prepare, which is great for us.
Yeah, we have four teams on UBC Improv. We have two semi-directed teams, one directed team, and one showcase team.
The way our shows work, which are essentially every other Friday, is that every team will do a 20-minute set, and we'll have an intermission, and we have laughs, and we have...
Yeah, and you might be wondering,
friends.
Aiden, what is a set exactly?
I was wondering what a set was, but...
I can tell
you
that.
Yeah, why don't you, because
yeah,
I was saying
I
that, and I don't know. You set
this.
Yourself up for that. Wow, look at this banter.
A set is essentially, as Aiden said, it's 20 minutes, but it is a form that we plan ahead of time. It is a improv format for the specific show.
We don't do the content ahead of time.
No, we don't. No, yes. But it is essentially the skeleton of an improv set. So we will have, for example, one of the most basic improv sets is called a Larry. What would you say?
I would say a Herald
is the most basic.
And a Herald, just to give you an idea of what an improv form kind of looks like when it's broken down, is three stories that are told in tandem and each having three beats, those beats broken up by a little sort of game in between. So you know going into it, okay, I'm going to be telling three different stories, and they're each going to be having three beats, and I'll be doing this. But beyond that, you don't know what the stories are, you don't know who's going to be in them, you don't know what the content's going to be, you don't know if they're going to be a happy or a sad ending. Hopefully they'll be funny, but you know sometimes they're really sad.
They're just really emotional, and you just kind of got to
I did an old Yeller set once, and it was rough. Like, because rough.
I gotcha.
Did you get it?
I did.
That's the kind of comedy you see at UBC Improv.
That's the quality.
Yeah, that's a little soundbite for you.
So, yeah, you guys kind of went into what an improv practice looks like.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
We get together, we warm up, we... Yeah.
We get to know each other first off. Mm-hmm. Like, that's probably one of the most important things, is getting to know your team, because yeah. that dynamic is important. The chemistry on stage is important. Kind of predicting what your teammate is going to do on stage yeah. beforehand, that all plays into getting to know each other. Which
I'd say a lot of people often approach improv like, oh, I could never do that. I can never come up with that on the spot. But they're assuming that, like, a lot of the onus of creativity is on you individually. But the hardest part is actually getting to a point where you are trusting your teammates, because you're doing at any one time just a fraction of the work, and together you end up with something that none of you could have done on your own anyways. So if there's someone to be like, oh, I could never do that, I mean, yeah, that's true. I also couldn't have done a whole set on my own.
Say I'm a student listening to this great interview. I'm like, this sounds really, really cool. How do students get involved with this?
Wow, that's a few ways.
That is a loaded question, Amy. I'm going to need you to back away for 2 seconds.
We didn't realize that would be personal questions.
So there are a couple ways you can get involved. If you are interested in performing, we hold auditions at the beginning of every year.
What's an audition like?
An audition is essentially, we get a 30-person group into a room, and we do a couple of exercises, and then this year is kind of different, but we split into two groups that do workshops, so we teach you a little bit about improv, so if you don't have any experience, it's completely okay. You get to meet people, and then we'll come back and do a cool down with everybody. So we play a couple games.
It sounds like the audition process is actually less of a stressful job interview, more like a chance to just play pretend with a bunch of strangers and walk out with a bunch of friends.
Yeah, wow, you just like, you read that as if
organic
as
Whole Foods.
Yeah, so that's one way you can get involved. And another way you can get involved, if you do not want to perform, is definitely coming out to
our
show.
Woo! Come on, settle down, people. Woo! I love it. Oh, please, please. That was our fans.
So, yeah, we do have shows every other Fridays. Please come out there at 7 p.m. in Scarf 100, Neville Scarf 100.
Mm-hmm. If I show up at 7, will I probably get a seat?
No, absolutely not.
What?
Yeah.
Wow, do you guys like sell out your shows or something?
We most certainly do, Aiden Parker.
Oh my goodness. So I gotta think, if I am buying a ticket at the door and I know these are popular shows, I should probably show up at least at like 6:30.
Yeah, exactly. Or even at 6. But I mean,
wow.
Don't let me pressure you.
How many
you.
Coins should I bring to pay for a show?
Exactly 3 coins. And
whoa.
Those coins should have loonies on them.
What if I brought 2 coins? One of them had a toonie on it and the other had a loonie on it. You mean with 2 pieces of metal I could get into a high-quality show like this?
Exactly.
Yikes. I hate us right now. If you don't want to show up super early and, you know, line up, which is totally valid, but also it's a fun time, you can buy online tickets, which are posted in our Facebook events, which always come up before our shows, and those guarantee you priority access to seating.
And speaking of priority access, you also get, if you want to see a lot of the shows and be a little bit more into our little improv community here at UBC, you can buy a membership, which is just $15, and it gets you into the shows, into all the shows for the entire year
for free. Wait, but you still have to line up, don't you?
No, you don't.
So you're telling me, not only do you get to go to all the shows, you get to go to all the shows for free, and you don't have to line up, and you get a sweet little snazzy card out of it.
And
wow.
You get a little workshop opportunity as well.
So, for example, if I... We're doing a weird scene there. So, if you missed auditions, or perhaps you don't want to commit to performing on a stage all the time, but you still want to get some improv experience, you still want to learn from us, maybe spend some time with us, we host special workshops for our members. And in those, you get to learn basic skills of improv, which you can then take into community. Or if
as
you
well
choose
as, like,
to audition,
public
you can do
speaking.
That. Public speaking, it's a huge thing.
How long have you guys been involved in UBC improv?
I'll let the veteran speak.
Of course.
Yeah, I have like improv battle scars. I got
what
this one.
What are they? They just stickers?
No, it's just emotional pain from when someone blocks me on a scene.
True.
I have been doing UBC improv for 4 years now. I started in my first year. And I'm so glad that I did, because obviously coming into a big university place, it's often hard to find a certain community, and people find that in different ways. For me, though, I wanted to find people who are like-minded who did improv. I, before UBC Improv, had been doing improv at, like, high schools, other places in Vancouver, so it was nice to go in and meet all of these people who also had this experience, but also people who had no previous experience who were also... I feel like I've been using the word also and improv a lot. But
yes,
these improvisers were also
synonym.
Joining. And you developed this huge network that really kind of grows beyond the club, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. I also started a UBC improv in my first year. I don't have as much high school improv experience as Aiden does, but I remember coming to UBC and kind of stalking the UBC improv Facebook page and the website. Essentially, I had looked into UBC improv and I saw that everybody was having fun, and I thought to myself, you know what, let me give it a shot. Let me try out. And yeah, I was on the advanced workshop team. Which is now called Showcase, and it kind of holds a different platform than it did before in the team. And yeah, this is my third year at UBC Improv.
So you started from the bottom and now you're here? Is that kind of how you would phrase that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's
direct
the bottom.
I mean, if you were to plot a time graph chart and the past
was
at the bottom.
I'm sorry, is your name Amy Shandro? Because... I think she needs to be.
So if the past was at the bottom and the future was at the top, you would have started at the bottom and now you would have been.
Yeah, I'm working my way back.
Here, you're going, we have to go back.
I'm not joining his bit. It's good.
Last thing, we have a show coming up.
We do.
Oh, wow.
We do.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's a Halloween show. What can people expect from that?
Spooktacular.
Okay. Yeah. And so if you've seen the movie It, just like times that by five.
Oh, if you've seen the first Pirates of the Caribbean, I found that spooky as a kid. It'll be like about half as scary as that.
If you've seen Lilo and Stitch, stay away.
Yeah, because it'll just be very different, I think.
Yeah, so, no.
Like,
so what people
it'll
can
appeal to a different audience.
Yeah. What people can expect is a good time.
A good time, which you're not gonna get from Lilo and Stitch. Am I right? I'm kidding. I love that movie.
Okay.
Ohana means family.
Yeah, so we kind of gave you the deets for the show before. Line up at 6:30, come on in with a bunch of your friends. It's a good time. It's around 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can expect is just a lovely night.
And like a really high energy time. Like
really high, yeah.
People
no, that's
often
true.
Are like, oh, improv, is it going to be like weird and awkward? It's like we get a lot of really diverse, fun people from UBC, and a bunch of different groups come out.
Yeah.
And it's a really packed time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we also have... Oh, so I'm so sorry.
I was going to say expect the unexpected.
Yeah, no.
Didn't expect that.
Oh. I just wanted to let people know that if you have come to an improv show before and you have complained that it is very humid and hot, you will not have that problem again this year.
Because we got
fans.
With the kind that blow.
Yeah.
Air.
Great. Thank you for this interview. This is Amy Shandro for CITR. Thanks for listening.
Your cell phone already has an FM receiver chip installed in it, but major Canadian telecommunication and mobile companies have blocked access to this free system to listen to the radio in favor of charging for data streaming. With access to the FM chip, your phone can still receive broadcasts and updates during an emergency, even if the cell towers are down. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
So you just heard an arts update from Amy Shandro. She's a UBC student, and you also heard her interview with the UBC Improv Club. So Jen, what is last up for the show?
So to end the show... Oh, I wasn't on. All right. So to end the show, we went around to the streets of UBC and asked some questions about Halloween. Should it be a holiday? Should candy be mandatory, or should it only be for the kids? So, but we'll find out.
Yeah, we got some pretty weird answers. Thank you all for listening to the UBC Spooky Hour this week. We'll be joined back next week as UBC Happy Hour. It'll be more happy next week. No more ghost stories. Have all a happy and safe Halloween. Eat lots of candy. Dress up. Go wild. Have fun. Peace out, Vancouver.
We're hanging out in the Nest, and we've spotted someone wearing a costume. What are you dressed up as?
So I am a dog, but I'm not a basic, simple dog, because most people, they have the nose, you know, maybe some ears, but I have the full suit here. I think Halloween is a point where you really give it your all. And as a dog, although it's simple, it's also kind of fun, so.
Does your dog have a name?
If I had a name to give myself, it'd probably be, yeah, like Moisture.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that answer. What are you doing for Halloween?
So for Halloween, I'm going to a few events that range from the calendar or the Pit's also having an event, but I'm not going to that one. But yeah, it's going to be a fun time, some house parties as well. I'm a Halloween junkie, so.
Do you think that there's a point where you're too old for Halloween?
I don't think there's ever a point where you're too old for Halloween. If you're 65 and you're dressing up as, let's say, a cop, you know, and you have a few clothes on, that's totally okay. And I think there's merit and value in actually embracing the holiday because it's an actual season, in my opinion.
You mean it should be like a stat holiday?
Do you think that Halloween should be like a stat holiday? Like, do you think we should get the day off to celebrate?
I don't think so, because people come to school and you can dress up at school. So professors should also make it mandatory for them to dress up. The students could also do this as well. I think there's just so much value to be provided overall.
Thank you so much, Moisture.
Yeah, thank you.
What are you being for Halloween?
I'm going to be part of a group doing a Tangled theme Halloween costume.
Tangled, like Rapunzel Tangled?
Yes, like Rapunzel Tangled.
What part would you be?
I would actually be Flynn Rider.
Okay, someone, is one person just going to be the hair?
Well, we have this one friend who's really blonde, long hair, so she will be Tangled. I mean, Rapunzel.
Cool. So where are you guys going to go out tonight?
We aren't going out tonight. I mean, we're going later. I actually am from Anchorage, Alaska, so I don't live around here.
So are you going out in Alaska?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really, there's not really a solid plan, so.
Why aren't you at UBC?
College tours.
Nice. So you're still in high school?
Yeah.
So when you get to university, do you think you're still going to be doing Halloween stuff?
If there's cool stuff to do, I suppose.
You don't think there's a point where you're like, I'm too old for Halloween this year?
Maybe once I'm out of college.
Once you're out of college?
What is the Alaskan way of celebrating Halloween? Do you guys, like, do something special in Alaska for Halloween?
Well, generally there's a ton of snow on the ground and it's really cold, so you just, basically your costume is half whatever you want to be and half Arctic Explorer. So that's kind of tough if you actually want to walk around and do things, but besides that, I think it's just like anywhere else.
So we're at the Research on Active Transportation booth. They're collecting some data or doing surveys on transportation on UBC campus, but we're talking to them about Halloween. So what are you dressing up as for Halloween?
Jackie Chan, I think.
You think? Okay. Are there any other possibilities?
Bruce Lee.
Okay, I see a theme happening here. What are you doing for Halloween?
Like, you know, get some... paint something on my face, like, you know, be crazy, just being crazy. It's my first year in Vancouver, so I just want to be crazy. I don't know, I just want to be crazy.
So have you ever celebrated Halloween before?
Yeah, I celebrate in United States, like, you know, so I played Jackie Chan once. So this reason I want to impress my classmate again. Because, you know, that one, I played Jackie Chan once in the United States. That was amazing. So all my classmates call, hey, Kurt, your father is Jackie Chan? I say, yes. Probably. My mom probably dated Jackie Chan before. Probably. I don't know. Just kidding.
Okay, wow.
So right now, you know why I'm so popular in China? Because I'm funny. Yeah? You agree with that?
I'm laughing. Okay. So I have no clue whether you're famous in China or not, but I would be willing to bet you are. Are you going to like any house parties or any clubs this weekend?
Nope. Because I'm doing my master degree, so I have to do my research plan. I have a deadline next week with my supervisor, so I have to do...
So what are you dressing up as for Halloween?
I am dressing up as one of the Beastie Boys from the Intergalactic video.
That is sick. What is your favorite Beastie Boy song?
Intergalactic, actually.
Nice. And you're sitting here with your dog. What's your dog's name?
His name is Cody.
Is Cody dressing up for Halloween?
Tomorrow he will be, but not tonight.
What is he dressing up as?
He'll be a bumblebee, and then his owner will be a beekeeper.
That is amazing. What do you think about animal costumes in general?
I like some of them. Some of them I disagree with. I think if it involves makeup on the face, it might be a bit too much, to be honest.
That's a really good answer. Are you doing anything fun for Halloween? Like, are you going to any parties or anything like that?
Yeah, I'll be at the biodiversity party tonight.
Me too.
And then I'll be doing Rocky Horror Picture Show tomorrow.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Happy Halloween.
Thank you. You as well.
What do you think about Halloween?
I think I liked it better when I was a kid because it transitions from a candy holiday to a drinking holiday, and I like the candy holiday better.
That's a good way to put it. So do you think there's a point where we're too old to celebrate Halloween?
No. I think one thing America loves, probably actually universal, is like just excuses to get inebriated. So the more of them there are, the better, you know.
Do you think that it should be a stat holiday where we get the day off?
No, it's not that important.
What about dressing up? That's pretty important, no?
Well, yeah, you could dress up and go to work.
Awesome.
You're listening to C.
Ooh, yeah.
I.
Hi-ya!
T.
Hi-ya!
R.
Woo-hoo!
101.9 Vancouver.
God damn it, baby. No, I ain't lying to you. I'm only gonna tell you one time.